Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, based in Seattle, Washington. Today on the show, I'm joined with Joshua Yunkin, Discovery Institute's Program Officer in Public Policy and Legal Affairs, also an attorney, to talk to us about the situation at Ball State University and Professor Erica Deans, whose free speech is being squelched to talk about intelligent design. So, Josh, thanks for coming on the show with us.
Thank you for having me, Casey.
Josh, many of our ID the Future listeners are probably semi-familiar with the Erica Deans case and what has gone on at Ball State University. But for those who perhaps have not been following this case closely, could you give us some background and tell us the backstory on what has happened at Ball State with Erica Deans?
Sure. Erica Deans is a physicist and a professor at Ball State University. He teaches a course on the boundaries of science at the Honors College. That course, Boundaries of Science, included a text that did feature the theory of intelligent design, among other things. The Freedom From Religion Foundation got wind that intelligent design was being taught in an Honors College course. They then sent a letter, a vaguely threatening letter, to Ball State University's president, Joanne Gora. Joanne Gora then took the letter seriously, allowed her provost to appoint a committee to investigate the claims of the Freedom From Religion Foundation's letter and to investigate Professor Hedin's qualifications to teach the course, his methods of teaching. It was a very invasive procedure, essentially, and it all happened without the guidance of the faculty handbook. They did it completely ad hoc, they say. The result of that investigation led to a report, which of course has been kept quiet and secret. They haven't decided to disclose it. And then that led ultimately to July 31, President's Perspective memo circulated by President Gora, in which she said intelligent design is not appropriate for science class and that religion has to be taught in a multi-perspective sort of way if it's brought up at all in a non-science class. And then, of course, as a result of all that, if that letter is applied, you'll have Dr. Hedin, Professor Hedin's course not being taught as it has been taught in the past. There'll be some changes ahead for him. And the problem with all this is that, first of all, it offends academic freedom, the law of academic freedom, with constitutional law. And also, we don't think that it's going to be applied evenly to all of BSU's faculty, which is a problem.
That's right, Josh. I know that earlier you, along with John West, sent a letter to Ball State University protesting what they were doing and asking them certain questions about how they were going to handle the case. The issue at stake here is academic freedom. Is Ball State University going to grant academic freedom for proponents of intelligent design? What are Ball State's general policies on academic freedom? Do they generally let their faculty have academic freedom to talk about controversial subjects?
Well, yeah. The academic freedom is a fairly well-entrenched doctrine or set of policies in academia generally. It shows up in all of the handbooks that guide the way that universities do their disciplinary hearings, the way that they investigate ethics complaints. It's an essential part of the modern American university, academic freedom is. And the law has long respected the university's ability to administer academic freedom, of course, in accord with principles of First Amendment law. The American Association of University Professors put out a statement on academic freedom in 1915, and then again, I think, in 1940. And both of those statements show up in Ball State University's faculty handbook, but it does not appear that Ball State University has followed its own handbook in investigating Dr. Hedin, and that is very unfortunate.
Yeah, I seem to recall, Josh, there's a statement in the faculty handbook that even says that controversial or unpopular views ought to deserve the protections of academic freedom. But yet it seems like Ball State University is not willing to extend those protections to intelligent design, even though you would think that they would fit squarely within what Ball State's policy says should be protected.
Intelligent design is actually the exact sort of thing that academic freedom was designed to protect. It's a minority science view that, unless it gets a hearing in the scientific and academic communities, could never even hope to become the majority view. That's the original purpose of academic freedom. It is, again, just very, very unfortunate that Ball State University is caving in to the bullies at the Freedom From Religion Foundation who want to censor minority viewpoints in science from getting a fair and honest hearing in the place where it ought to be heard, which is at university.
Now, thinking back to President Gora's statement that said, basically it amounted to a speech code, and it said that intelligent design will not be taught in our science classes. We've seen this at other universities in the past. But that letter tried to give a couple of reasons why, in her view, ID should not be taught. One of those arguments was that ID is not the quote-unquote consensus view. So how would you respond to the argument that only the consensus ought to be discussed in a college-level science classroom called The Boundaries of Science, designed to explore larger implications of the scientific evidence?
Well, first of all, if I'm a student, I'm not going to take that majority science-only class. That sounds terribly boring. That's not how you train kids in how to think through the conflicts that shape society, the scientific conflicts. If you just taught only the consensus view, and I'm a student, I don't show up to class. So that's the first thing. You're going to make a boring course with just a minority viewpoint. And you're not going to teach kids anything about how they actually should debate. You have to have two points of view in order to have a debate. It is through the process of debate that science emerges as trustworthy and reliable. So you're really doing future scientists, or at least future science educators, future science literates, you're doing them a disservice by shielding them for their own sake, supposedly, from quote-unquote pseudoscience or non-science. That's not really the bailiwick of college administrators. They're just supposed to create an environment in which these sorts of discussions can take place. They actually don't exist in order to shut them down. They're actually doing the opposite of what they're supposed to do. They're not doing their jobs. They're doing the opposite of their jobs.
Another one of President Gore's arguments was that intelligent design lacks, quote-unquote, academic integrity. What about the concept of academic integrity, which President Gore cited as the reason why ID can't be taught in BSU science classrooms?
Yeah, that's a good question. Academic integrity, it's not even codified, but it is sort of a set of norms that exist within the academy that govern things like research misconduct, plagiarism between faculty, you know, from one faculty paper to another, student cheating. It's basically bound up with ideas of honesty in the conduct of academic life. And it really doesn't have anything to do with the content of what is taught. That's actually the domain of academic freedom. So you can kind of see academic integrity and academic freedom as two sides of a coin where one is the limit of the other. And academic integrity is what President Gora, BSU President Gora, said that she was vindicating when she put down the hammer on intelligent design. But she's really misusing academic integrity because it just really applies to the areas of student ethics, of cheating in class, as mentioned, research misconduct, reporting false numbers in a published paper in a science journal, for example. That's the area of academic integrity. And importantly, the law doesn't really concede academic integrity as any source of rules for obligations or bind on the work of administrators. The only thing that really binds the work of administrators actually is academic freedom. So it's funny that she's going with academic integrity as the source of obligation for her. You know, I have to do this because this is what academic integrity tells me, when in fact it's quite the opposite. It's academic freedom that she should be taking her cues from, legally speaking.
Now, Josh, you recently sent another letter along with Dr. John West and also another Discovery Institute staff member, Donald McLaughlin, to President Gore. And I know that in that letter, you guys cited a quote from a Nobel Prize-winning scientist, a physicist actually, much like Eric Hedin, who supports intelligent design. His name is Charles Townes. He won the Nobel Prize in Physics many years ago, but he supports intelligent design. Now, in my book, what that tells me is that intelligent design passes this minimal test of academic integrity with flying colors and then some. The idea that somehow ID lacks academic integrity sort of blown away when you're seeing that Nobel Prize winning scientists are endorsing your views. And there, of course, there are other reasons to see that ID has academic integrity. For example, the text that Dr. Hedin used in his class that supported intelligent design, this was, of course, just one of a number of different topics that they were looking at, but the text was written by Dr. John Lennox, who is a mathematician at Oxford University. Clearly somebody who is academically credible. You would think that therefore it would fall within the rubric of academic freedom and not lack academic integrity, whatever that means to President Gora. So it seems like ID has the sort of academic credibility that ought to legitimize it for being talked about in a science classroom at a university like Ball State. What do you think of that?
I think you make a very good point, Casey. Like you said, Charles Townes is at the University of California, Berkeley. He is a Nobel Prize winning physicist, and he said intelligent design, as one sees it from a scientific point of view, seems to be quite real. Now, according to President Joanne Gora, this Nobel Prize winning physicist would be offending.
He lacks
the norms
academic
of
integrity,
academic,
right?
Yeah. So supposedly, you know, she would know, of course, you know, she's of she's a college president. No, of course she doesn't know. This is the sort of thing that physicists like Erica Dean and Charles Town both know, which is that intelligent design doesn't, of course, offend any norms of academic integrity, and it's well within the scope of academic freedom, which is the body of law.
It may not be the consensus view, but you don't have to be the consensus view in order to have academic integrity. And I think that's something that got lost in President Gore's thinking, mm-hmm. that there can be non-majority or you might say minority scientific views that are academically credible. They're not held by all scientists or the majority, but they are held by credible scientists, and there is scientific evidence supporting those views, and they ought not to be censored from classrooms. And I think we can take a lesson from the history of science here. Many scientific revolutions, in fact, every scientific revolution started off as a minority scientific view. And if you tell people that you can't talk about these minority views, you're really hindering science from progressing and being able to overturn previously held wisdom that has now been shown to be false.
Yeah, and then I think one of the examples is a Dr. Semmelweis in Austria back in the turn of the 20th century advocated washing hands before and after surgical procedures. And of course, he was, in fact, laughed out of town and out of the academy. He, of course, ended up being proven right in the end. But in order for him to be proven right in the end, there has to be some debate that happens on the subject of that which got him out on a pike. So what are we going to do?
I think what we do is we do nothing. In other words, we don't step in and try to tell them what they ought to think and what they ought to say. We let the free marketplace of ideas and debate and evidence settle these debates. We should not be stepping in and trying to put dictates on what can and cannot be said in a science classroom that's being taught by a credible scientist. As long as that instructor is talking about academically credible ideas that fall within the bounds of academic freedom, then their speech ought to be protected. And I think when we start to squelch that speech, it becomes a very dangerous situation for science because it can no longer ask hard questions. It can no longer seek to progress beyond what is already known. And this is a very dangerous development for science to be in, where speech codes are literally being implemented, telling scientists what they can and cannot say in the classroom.
And you say speech codes, and that's about what we've got here. We've got President Gore's memo, which says no ID in science class, and you really can't teach religion in science class. And if you're going to do religion in a non-science class, you got to do it in a sort of multi-perspective way. That sounds all well and good, I guess, but not necessarily from a legal standpoint. But is she actually going to enforce it, even-handedly?
Well, yeah, Josh, and I've got to stop you here because it's actually not the case that Ball State University is censoring all expression of intelligent design or all discussions of religion. And you've actually done quite a bit of research looking at what's being taught in some of these classes at Ball State where ID is being taught, it's just being bashed, or religion is being discussed, it's just being trashed. So can you talk about how this is actually a double standard, and what is some of the evidence that shows that Ball State University is allowing scientists to talk about intelligent design so long as it's in a disparaging kind of way?
Yeah, there is unfortunately evidence of that. Thanks to some public records requests we've put upon the university, we've learned that three professors in particular, very relatable, very similarly situated professors who also teach honors college courses, which of course was what Hedin was teaching, do also just what you said, which is that they teach religion, but they teach a disparaging view of it, or they teach design, but they teach a disparaging view of it. Professor Ranieri, for example, teaches a course on dangerous ideas, and the book is called What is Your Dangerous Idea? It's the only book that he assigns. In it is an essay, for example, titled Science Must Destroy Religion. The whole book is like that. And the same goes for Professor Blackwell, although not quite as hard-edged. His course and his materials that he assigns are definitely religious, but they're non-traditionally religious, and they undermine traditional religious views. So you can do that. You can attack, design, or you can attack religion with science. What you can't do is you can't discuss both together in a way that makes traditional religion or design look good.
So really, there's not a speech code, as President Gore stated it. Really, the speech code is you're not allowed to support intelligent design. You're allowed to bash it, but it's not the case that you're not allowed to discuss it at all.
Yeah. Speech code is even a little bit misleading. It's a bit of a misnomer because codes are generally applied generally. And they apply to everybody. But this is not a code. This is targeting.
Just to maybe give us a recap here, you and John West and Donald McLaughlin have sent a letter to President Gore recently. And the letter is asking her what?
We want her to lift the ban on intelligent design. We don't want anyone to be hushed on that subject. We think whether you want to talk bad about it or talk good about it, you should be free under academic freedom, law, and policy and such to do that. However, if they're not going to do that, and we suspect that they may not, we would like them to at least be consistent. if only for legal risk's sake, to apply the same standard to everybody equally. Now, I don't think they're going to do that either. So we'll have to see, though, what they do. I remain a little bit hopeful, but we've seen in the past where they tend to thumb your nose at you and then until you really get serious. And so we'll see what happens after that. But we're also asking for one other thing, and I think this is extremely important. I don't want to overlook it. And that is, we want to understand exactly how is it that they went about doing their investigation. Because we've had some vague allusions to the handbook, but we haven't had any pinpoint precision as to what section they're falling when they did such and such. And this whole thing's been sort of done under the cover of dark. And that, to me, is probably the most disconcerting thing, is the fact that they're trying to evade the light. I don't know that they're going to compromise. I would love for them to compromise. I would love for them to say, okay, look, if we're going to do a speech code, we're actually going to apply it generally. But they can't do that because the faculty would be in an uproar. So that's not going to happen. I think at the very least, what I'd like to see them do is come clean with about how they've done what they've done. What memos did President Gore rely upon in order to produce her president's perspective? I have the sneaking suspicion that it was based upon some terribly faulty legal reasoning. I'd love to see that legal reasoning. I'd love to see what other things that she relied upon. I'd love to see the committee report that she's relying upon. This is all done under secrecy. The news media has been asking for this committee report. They won't give it. We already know that the committee report was done in an ad hoc and non-handbook manner by a bunch of people who were already evinced in advance a hostility to design. I mean, a couple of these people even participated in Darwin Day things and were affiliates of the National Center for Science Education. These are people that were not chosen because of their impartiality. So I want to.
In fact, they were chosen because of their partiality.
Exactly.
They were chosen because it was a kangaroo committee.
Absolutely.
It was carefully selected in order to find people who already had an anti-intelligence design view and would create the predetermined outcome that the president and the provost wanted to have when Hedin was being investigated.
Do I feel like, from a lawyerly standpoint, maybe the biggest and most egregious offense is the way that they've gone about it. We just think it's been below board instead of being above board. And I'd like to get it all up in front of the light.
Yeah, that's great. And I know that one of the things that you ask in your letter is, what procedures are you following to create this ad hoc kangaroo committee in order to have Professor Hedin told he's not allowed to talk about intelligent design? What procedures are you using? And so far, Ball State has refused to even answer what procedures from the faculty handbook that they're using.
Yeah.
They won't even explain what that is. And we've looked at the faculty handbook and we can't find any procedures that authorize this sort of a process.
This handbook's 320 pages long, I think, give or take. And I've looked through, I think, almost every single word in there. And there's nothing that I find in the handbook that even begins to look like what I understand that they've done so far. So I'm extremely curious to see what they come up with. And hopefully they will actually answer our questions and tell us how they did what they did.
So, Josh, I think probably many ID the Future listeners are feeling fairly concerned, if not outraged, about what's going on at Ball State University. We have a situation where a professor who is very well liked by his students, respected by his colleagues, supported by his department, was teaching a course where they simply were exploring the boundaries of science. It was approved by the university. He talked about views from various scientists, including some who are pro-intelligent design, credible scientists like a mathematician from Oxford University. And the university responds by implementing a speech code saying you're not allowed to talk about intelligent design. And meanwhile, faculty members are still being allowed to bash intelligent design and even bash religion. Obviously, there's a double standard at work here. Obviously, this is an offense to those who support freedom of speech. So what can our listeners do if they are concerned about what's going on at Ball State University to help make a difference in this situation?
Well, Joanne Gora, president of Ball State, is not without her superiors. She, too, runs a university under the supervision of other people. Those people are called the Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees can provide oversight to Gora and can provide her with some guidance on what to do next and how to do better what she's doing. So we would ask listeners of ID the Future and their friends also to take a look at a webpage we're going to be putting up very soon at Evolution News and Views, where you can find the email addresses of these members of Board of Trustees for Ball State University and contact them. If we don't put up an email list directly, we'll perhaps make a form available. There will be an action item very soon coming that will make this easier for folks who are inside Indiana and outside Indiana to make their voice heard on how this has been handled the wrong way and it needs to be corrected. And the point of pressure right now is the Board of Trustees. And if the Board of Trustees doesn't do the right thing, of course, there may be somebody else we talk to. But for right now, the Board of Trustees needs to hear from ID the Future listeners about how Ball State University, through President Gora, has handled this matter badly.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Josh. So go to evolutionnews.org, where you can find action items on contacting the Board of Trustees that oversee Ball State University and President Joanne Gora and tell them that you want academic freedom restored at Ball State University. You think scientists should have the right to talk about criticisms of intelligent design, but also to express credible scientific views like the pro-ID view. Tell them that you think that it is wrong to have a double standard and a speech code that prevents scientists from having the academic freedom to talk about intelligent design. So again, go to evolutionnews.org for more information about how to contact the Board of Trustees at Ball State University. Josh, thanks so much for coming on the show with us.
Thank you, Casey. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.